You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last November, the news media were filled with stories about Alexander Litvinenko, a former Russian FSB officer and critic of the Kremlin who died of radiation poisoning. There were many theories about who was behind the murder, and now, with the help of Alexander Litvinenko's widow, Marina, his friend Alex Goldfarb has written a book called The Death of a Dissident, The Poisoning of Alexander Litvinenko and the Return of the KGB. It's published by Free Press, and I'm very pleased that Alex Goldfarb and Marina Litvinenko could join me today on my show. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Alex, you start the book by describing the Litvinenko's flight from Russia. Was that when you first met Sasha?
I briefly had met him before in Moscow, but I didn't know him well. And when Boris Berezovsky, the Russian politician and businessman whom I knew briefly also, asked me to go to Turkey and to help the Litvinenkos to enter American embassy, ask for protection and asylum. It was a surprise, but being an adventurous type, I decided to go. And then the whole story started for me.
Now, Marina, you wanted to come to the United States first. Why didn't that happen? Why was that impossible?
Actually, it was first opportunity to ask place to go. I can't say I'd like to go, because it was so devastating for me to take this decision not to go back to Russia, actually, because we were on a holiday with my son when it was first asking from Sasha to me not to go back to Russia.
Sasha is Alexander's nickname.
Exactly.
We'll call him Sasha from now on.
Yes, everybody, yes, now know him like a Sasha. And when we met first time, Alexander Goldfarb in Turkey, when we meet each other after 1 month to stay apart, and it was first decision to go to American embassy because Alex Goldfarb is American citizen.
And we'll get to how that happened. But by going to the American embassy, you were informing the Russian government that you were thinking of defecting, weren't you?
Actually, not all those time. Everything for me, it was just like, to be honest, unreal. No, to take this decision for me, it's just like stop my life, my normal life. Even it wasn't easy, particularly in the past time. And to go from just for nothing, for never, and of course.
Because once you leave, you leave. But would that have been a problem for them?
Once the
Russian government knows that a former FSB officer is defecting, alarm bells go off.
We didn't advertise it to the Russian government. It should be understood that it all happened so fast for Marina, because she went on a vacation in Spain with her son, and Sasha, in his own way, sneaked out to Turkey with false documents because his own passport had been taken away. And
To prevent him from leaving the country.
Yes, he was under investigation. And he actually had served a short period in prison, 9 months. He was acquitted, then recharged with another misdeed by the FSB, and he fled. So Marina was, learned. It was happening so fast, and she learned it on the spot. So, but we suspected that when we go to the American embassy in Ankara, we would be spotted probably by a Russian surveillance team, after having read all the spy novels. So, and indeed, after we were turned down, after we actually were interviewed, Sasha was interviewed.
Mm-hmm. You were just accompanying him.
Yes, they kicked us out, and they interviewed him for quite a long time in this safe room in the embassy. And when they said to us, go back to your hotel, we spotted, we believed, some surveillance in the hotel, and it was scary.
Why did the United States refuse to take the Litvinenkos?
Well, we don't know. Initially, they said we would take them after having talked to him, but then they said that they changed their mind and they wouldn't. And the best explanation we could get informally from knowledgeable people who know how those things operate was that they probably considered that whatever information Sasha can provide was of very little value. He was an officer in organized crime unit as compared to the problems with the Russians that they would have. So they decided just to stay away from this whole thing. It was political. It was no intelligence situation.
Now, Marina, why had he been arrested and imprisoned?
Sasha started to speak openly against FSB, what was everybody knew like a KGB.
The KGB changed its name to the FSB after the fall of the Soviet
Union.
Exactly,
but not only change name, even change some way to work, because it's already, on those time, it wasn't Monster who everybody remember it was. It was like different units or departments. And Sasha used to work against organized crime. But he started to consider something wrong because corruption and illegal way to work started to be like normal in his job. And when he received order to kill Mr. Berezovsky, who was quite famous, not like a businessman or like a person from government, he understood this is just last what he liked to do. It took him almost 2 months to decide it's serious, it's not a joke, or it's not just like simple question to him. And
I mean, when they posed the idea that he might kill Berezovsky, he first thought, are they kidding?
Exactly, but it took him almost 1 year to go to this press conference. Even he knew it's not going to be easy life for him after what happened, because nobody before could openly speak against FSB.
So he had a press conference in which he said, they've told me to kill Berezovsky?
It's a little bit more complex.
This.
As Marina said, and we describe in the book in detail, a group of officers actually four or five of them became very concerned with the style and corruption and all these extrajudicial actions of the FSB.
Was Putin in charge at the time?
No. It was long before Putin. It was 2 years before Putin.
Hadn't he been connected to the FSB?
At that time, no. Putin worked in the Kremlin administration at the time. So Sasha and his comrades from that unit actually started complaining about various cases, including the alleged orders to kill Berezovsky, but there were others some of them purely corruption, some of them political. And there was an internal investigation within the FSB, which lasted for almost 6 months. And when this investigation was going on, Putin became the FSB director. And some people argued that Putin was appointed as the FSB director from the Kremlin administration as a result of this group's complaint. But then when Putin became the director, he started going after these people. And it is then, as a measure of self-protection, they decided to go public. And at that press conference, indeed, the Berezovsky episode became the most prominent because Berezovsky, at the time, was a very senior government figure.
He had been an advisor to the Kremlin, and he was one of those who supported the appointment of Vladimir Putin to head the FSB.
Yes.
So something must have gone on to lead to a decision to kill him.
That's what I'm saying. Berezovsky was a very high-level person in Yeltsin's government, and in this capacity, he was instrumental in negotiating a peace treaty with Chechnya after the first war. And there was a cabal of FSB officers and military generals who were unhappy about this peace treaty. So this talk about assassinating Berezovsky within the agency was some sort of a rogue initiative of so-called party of war, of officers opposed to the peace with the Chechens, which they considered to be betrayal of the motherland.
And actually, Sasha had gone to Chechnya at one point and been shocked by what he had seen there. So this is a combination, the story, really, of corruption and Chechnya. And I assume that corruption was not new in this case, that he had seen a fair amount of corruption before. Is it because of Chechnya that he felt he had to speak out in this instance?
I think he, of course, his first disillusionment came as after seeing rampant corruption, which was the real reason of his disillusionment. But then he got sucked into the high-powered Kremlin politics, where Berezovsky and other oligarchs around Yeltsin were pitted against security services. And that's actually ended in him flying to London.
He had a theory about who was behind the 1999 Moscow apartment bombings. That also got him into trouble, didn't it, Marina?
Yes, Sasha started to do it when he was already in London, you know, and they started to do this, to write this book and start this investigation, of course, against what happened in Russia.
He said that that it wasn't Chechens who bombed the Moscow apartment house, but rather the Russian government itself.
But actually, it was point to take Putin in power, to be like a president who Russians supported.
He was the prime minister at the time,
and this would guarantee
that he'd be elected president in the 2000 elections.
These allegations that Russian secret services had something to do with those terrorist attacks in Moscow in order to help Putin become president were flying around from the very first day when this. It was all over in the press, but then it somehow subdued. So when a year and a half later, Sasha ended up in London, he picked up the subject and started investigating it because at the time there were rumors, allegations, because no Chechens were found implicated in that. And he engaged a friend of his, Mr. Mikhail Tripashkin, another former FSB officer who stayed back in Moscow together with some parliament members to investigate these allegations. And it so happened that members of that public committee, including two members of parliament, were killed one by one in unexplained manner. And Mr. Tripashkin is now serving a term in jail. So it was a very kind of murky episode, which still remains a conspiracy theory. But Sasha's own death puts, in retrospect, this theory in a very different light.
Well, it's really quite complicated, and it almost reads like Cold War spy novel rather than a real life story. But we'll try to sort it out as best we can after we take a little break. My guests are Marina Litvinenko, the widow of Alexander Litvinenko, Sasha Litvinenko, and Alex Goldfarb, who have collaborated on a book called Death of a Dissident, The Poisoning of Alexander Litvinenko and the Return of the KGB. It's from Free Press. We're back with Alex Goldfarb, who has written a book called Death of a Dissident, The Poisoning of Alexander Litvinenko and the Return of the KGB. With the help of Marina Litvinenko, the book is published by Free Press. Alex, how did you get involved in this project? When did you leave Russia?
Well, I left Russia 30 years ago.
And you came
here.
At
the height of the Cold War, and I lived in Israel. Then for 25 years, I live in New York.
And how did you wind up getting involved in this story?
Well, I worked for George Soros, the philanthropist, and I ran his projects in Moscow after the collapse of the communism. And through Soros connections, I met Berezovsky and other senior members of the Yeltsin's government. And that's how I got sucked into this whole situation.
In 2002, there was that Moscow theater siege. At that time, the two of you were living in London.
Mm-hmm.
What did Sasha think about that? Did he think the FSB was involved in that attack as well?
Actually, what happened after one guy from Chechen people later after this started to work for some government I don't know what exactly when he worked, because it was saying by Anna Politkovska, Russian journalist, who's actually killed as well. And he started to suspect it's something behind of this operation.
This was a very bizarre episode.
Well, Anna Politkovskaya was a famous investigative journalist,
yes.
And she had been investigating the situation in Chechnya and upsetting people in the Kremlin.
Yes, she was covering Chechnya for this Moscow newspaper and was famous, quite famous, but she was at this theater during the siege when it was taken over by Chechen terrorists, and she actually for a while was even go between the terrorists and the police which surrounded the theater. But then later, she uncovered a Chechen gentleman who was identified among terrorists on the second day of the siege. His name was published as one of the hostage takers. And this man survived, and she found him, and he gave her an interview that she published. And in that interview, this man, his name was Khanpasha Terkibayev, claimed that he was working for the FSB. He was an undercover with the terrorists, and he helped them to get to the theater. And then he left one day before the theater was stormed with this poison gas. And this led Anna Politkovskaya to write in her article that probably the whole theater operation was somehow... The FSB at least knew about it beforehand.
Well, there have been many accusations of incompetence after the siege took place, but she's the only one who makes this claim, and it's been kind of hard to prove conclusively that the FSB has been involved in either of these things, the 1999 bombing or 2002
siege. It's very hard to prove, but it's not... what happened is that she asked that question, what the FSB undercover agent was doing from among the terrorists. And then this guy was killed in a car accident. And the government refused to explain that. And it also refused to explain why all other hostage takers were killed execution style while they were incapacitated, and why in the first place 50 people with tons of explosions ended up in the center of Moscow, and why they didn't explode their explosives. So there were very, very many questions. And this is exactly, I agree with you, one of the conspiracy theories which become even more ominous when the government started to cover them up. And then Anna Politkovskaya was killed herself. So this is all these episodes, a string of them, which become very, very suspicious in the retrospect after Sasha's death, which we think we can directly attribute to the Russian security services.
Now, Sasha starts speaking out strongly against Putin. Did he ever worry? Did he ever fear for his life? He published two books that were critical of the Russian government.
He published two books. He wrote a lot of articles on the internet, particularly for Chechen press, and some all these articles were quite strong, and many of them were against Putin. Sasha tried to react it any what happened in Russia and in the world, but to be in England, he every time said, "It's quite good to be here. It's an island, and we feel very safe here." And particularly when we received British citizenship, it became more secure for us.
But he was targeted in 2006. Why not earlier, do you think, Alex? There are all sorts of things that he did, I'm sure,
there are several
the Kremlin
things
before.
That happened. In 2003 to 2004, Russia failed to win extradition of two major figures in anti-Putin emigre circles in London, that is Berezovsky, Boris Berezovsky, who before that had quarreled with Putin, fled to England and became funding anti-Putin opposition. And the second person is Ahmed Zakayev, a moderate member of the Chechen government, who also received asylum in Britain. So after Russia failed to win their extradition, British courts blocked it, they started openly saying that they consider these people enemies of the state, terrorists, extremists, and they are free to do whatever they want. So it is in the end of 2004 that the kind of a mode of operations considering London as much a battle zone as Chechnya was adopted by the Russian government, even on the legal level.
Marina, when did Sasha realize that he had been poisoned?
Actually, Sasha realized it almost on the first day. He told me, Marina, it's quite strange. It is not food poisoning at all, because everything what he felt, it was so strong, so powerful, and he became extremely exhausted immediately. He felt his heart almost stopped on the first day, and he said, Marina, what is food going to give me this problem, or any infection, it couldn't be. And because he was educated in military school, it gave him opportunity to speak about in this way. He said it's more like chemical poisoning than food poisoning at all. But, of course, when we were already in hospital and we tried to take all this attention about poisoning from medical staff, they couldn't believe to us.
But there had been other cases where there had been accusations of poisoning, different kinds of poisoning. There was Viktor Yushchenko in the Ukraine. There was the Russian reformer Yegor Gaidar. Both of them survived. But at this point, I would think that people would have been suspicious of any dissidents.
You see, people in the community hospital in the outskirts of London, they don't automatically connect the poisoning of Viktor Yushchenko in Ukraine to a patient who has symptoms of food poisonings on their hands.
So they just thought it was food poisoning?
Yes, initially. So they discounted it until actually 2 weeks later, and not only them, us discounted it. Neither me nor other people there believed that he was poisoned until the doctors confirmed it. And it took 2 weeks before, and then his hair started falling out, and he developed real symptoms of chemical or radiation poisoning where people started sounding alarm.
What was it like, Marina, to watch him waste away like that?
You know, it's horrible now, particularly because when he stayed in hospital every day, I thought he'll recover one day. Even he became extremely ill. And actually, first week when he stayed in hospital, he started to show some signs of recover. And even one day, it was saying you can take him home. I was so happy. I went back to home to clean everything. I was ready to take him. But actually, they said we need to keep him more days. And after a few days, he started to be extremely ill because his tissue, his mouth, everything was in a horrible condition. He couldn't open his mouth. He couldn't speak. He couldn't drink. He couldn't eat.
And that doesn't sound like food poisoning. At
yes,
a certain point,
this
people
is,
must
in,
have said,
no,
wow, what's going
on? In this way, they said it's probably side effect of antibiotics. You see, but you say, how is possible this to be the strong effect? They say it will try to find. But when I actually started to see his hair started to be fall down, and I ask again, but what's this? They said, we need to check him for many different problem, like some hepatizer or like some HIV, you know?
Yeah, but your hair doesn't fall out from those. It falls out from radiation poisoning,
doesn't it? But because if
it?
He got this problem or this, like, illness, and together with antibiotics could give this reaction of his body, you know?
Actually, this is a classical situation of radiation poisoning. For the first 2 weeks, when people are exposed to radiation, even from the outside, they don't have any symptoms. It's called the walking ghost stage, when the DNA in your cells is already destroyed, but the our organism functions as if by inertia, and only after 2 weeks organs started to fail one by one. So, and this is what happened. Then they immediately suspected there was radiation poisoning, but they couldn't find any radiation.
He was not showing any radioactive.
No, they checked him with the counters and with this, you know, scanning things that they use in radio medicine to detect cancers. They found no trace of radiation, neither outside nor inside, and he was never close to radiation source. So they discounted radiation. They couldn't explain what it was. And that The reason for that was that polonium-210, which was ultimately discovered by the military specialists, not by the police and not by doctors, but by the British atomic energy experts, this element produces radiation which is not readily detectable by normal hospital equipment.
And it's everywhere. It's a rather common within the environment, which would probably complicate things even more. My guests are Alex Goldfarb and Marina Litvinenko. The book, The Death of a Dissident, The Poisoning of Alexander Litvinenko and the Return of the KGB, published by Free Press. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Once they realized it was polonium-210, then the British authorities got involved, didn't they? Didn't Scotland Yard at one point tell you, Marina, that they'd followed the trail of polonium-210 and knew who had done it?
Actually, when we realized this polonium, we stayed at home after everything that happened after death of my husband. And while I released this call almost 2 a.m., about asking for meeting with people from Scotland Yard. Of course, I was surprised. It's again, I just like to say, when Sasha died, nobody knew it's polonium. And when just next morning, 2 a.m., I got this meeting with people from Scotland Yard who told me, Marina, it's polonium. We don't know what is exactly, but we know it's very dangerous and never been before. Nobody uses it just like weapon against people.
Mm-hmm. This is the first time anybody
exactly,
been killed
and
with
just
this.
Told me, Marina, please, you should go from your home because it's not a safe place for you to stay. And I've got only 20 minutes to take something for me, for my son, and to go out from house immediately. And, of course, investigation just started. It was already not like crime investigation. It was anti-terroristic unit from Scotland Yard. And when I received how many people worked in this case,
there were 3,000 officers involved. It was something unbelievable.
When did the former KGB bodyguard and businessman Andrei Logovoy become the prime suspect?
Well, in Sasha's mind, he became prime suspect from day one, essentially, because he met him before being poisoned. So he has suspected him. But as for...
Is it a coincidence that Logovoy was a bodyguard for Yegor Gaidar at one point and Yegor Gaidar was poisoned?
I thought it was a coincidence. But in any case, Sasha suspected him from day one, and he informed this, told this to the police when they interviewed him in the hospital.
Why was he so sure?
Well, because he was the Russian whom he met on the day of poisoning. That was his last meeting. And he believed that if anybody had a motive to poison him was the Russian government.
But there was also Mario Scarmella, an Italian academic who'd met with him the same day that he met with Logovoy. And
yes, there was also talk about Italian, but the Italian gentleman. But Sasha kind of said that, let's use Italian as a decoy, but I'm sure it's try to lure Logovoy back to London. After all, for the first, 3 weeks, he was pretty functional before he started to deteriorate. And that was, the police was involved and so on. So Logovoy was kind of a suspect from day one. But the real change came when they discovered polonium, as Marina said, on the night he died. And then they brought appropriate equipment from their secret labs, and they discovered the trail of polonium, which Logovoy and his associate left all around London and in British Airways plane, and even the British Embassy in Moscow when they requested visa for 2 weeks prior to the poisoning. That's probably the most important part of the British evidence against Logovoy when they said that they indict him for murder.
You write in the book, there's only one credible murder motive: to pin a murder on the other side in the unending contest of wills between Putin and Berezovsky. Was there any attempt to frame Boris Berezovsky for the murder?
Well, if you read the Russian press or even the official statements of Russian officials, including President Putin himself, starting from the murder of Anna Politkovskaya, I quote Putin. He said, our fugitives from our justice in London, he means, have been looking for a sacrificial lamb to kill somebody and pin it on our government. This is what he says about the murder of Anna Politkovskaya.
And it played well in Russia.
It played well in Russia. And now all of the Russians, or most of the Russians, or at least half of the Russians, believe that Berezovsky killed one of his closest friends and associates in order to pin it on Putin. And it would have been believed by the rest of the world if not for polonium. If they hadn't discovered this specific radioactive element, which is produced only in Russian nuclear reactors, and which is impossible to get even for very big money, because it's a weapon of mass destruction, actually, and they wouldn't have been able to identify Mr. Lugovoy, and everybody would have believed it's Boris, because people don't like to think that presidents order murders.
But didn't Sasha undermine his credibility a bit with some of the other allegations that he made, like Putin being a pedophile, that the Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi was the KGB's man in Europe, and also the connection between the FSB, KGB, and various terrorist organizations around the world? They don't seem to be all that...
Well, all taken in the context, these allegations do not seem that much outrageous, even though they are not proven. For example, everybody knows that the KGB is the great-grandfather of all terrorist movements around the world, starting with the Red Brigades and the Arab terrorism, Black September in the days of the Cold War. So that's what he meant when he says about the pedophile thing. This was a theory which was circulated in the Russian press a long time ago. It has no grounds behind it, and nobody says that Sasha was objective in his statements, and his credibility in those days might be questioned. It doesn't mean that people should be killed by polonium in the middle of London 5 years later. You know, so I'm not trying to say that Sasha was your, you know, New York Times bureau chief in London with all the standards of objective journalism. He was a dissident who was attacking Russian government, rightly or wrongly, and we believe that the Russian government killed him for that. That's the point.
Marina, you have a 12-year-old son, and you're a British citizen. And I assume that you don't see any possibility of returning to Russia in the near future.
Actually, our son Anatoly, he's 13 just recently. It means he's a teenager. And I hope Sasha will be proud of him to see how he's growing, even for these last few months. And we are British citizens. And Anatoly, half his life, he lives in London. And sometimes I'm not sure he's Russian or he's an English boy, because he behaved in this way and this way. And he loves London very much. He remembers something about his life in Moscow, but of course not exactly the same. And I'm very sad after what happened with his daddy. He's not sure he'd like to go to Russia. Even he stopped to do his club, what was in Russian School of Russian Language. Maybe it's needs some time when he started to feel good and positive about Russia.
Well, I hope you can pick up and move on.
And every time I told him,
every
time say, I don't like to say I'm enemy of Russia, and Sasha was enemy of Russia as well. I love Russia, and Sasha loved Russia all his soul. And just people who ruled now Russia try not in the best way. And one day, probably, Anatoly will understand about this.
Although, unfortunately, the situation seems to be going in the wrong direction. It's getting more and more autocratic, but who knows? I want to thank you both so much for being with us, Marina Litvinenko and Alex Goldfarb. The book Death of a Dissident, The Poisoning of Alexander Litvinenko and the Return of the KGB, published by Free Press.
Thank you.